Welcome to Beyond the Frontline Podcast, where your hosts, U.S. Air Force veterans, Donna Hoffmeyer and Jay Johnson, will help you transition from the front line to the home front. Listen every other Wednesday, as they will bring great conversations, resources, tips, and feel-good stories that will resonate and relate. Now, here's your hosts, Donna Hoffmeyer and Jay Johnson.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Beyond the Front Lines. This is Jay Johnson you're listening to right now, and we are excited to have you back in this time and space with us. We always enjoy bringing you interesting tidbits for any of you that may have worn our nation's uniform. And even to be honest, we say, even if you didn't wear our nation's uniform, I'm sitting in studio right now with the queen. I started off saying it the right way. The one, the only, Miss Donna Hoffmeyer. Donna, how are you, my friend?
You're kidding. That is a Christmas gift.
Am I? What?
You're going to get something that says the queen on it.
Oh, why do I need that? That's backwards, isn't it?
Sure.
Oh, my goodness. We're gonna hang whatever she's talking about up in studio so I have it staring in my face.
Sherry, borrow it. She's the queen, too.
Yeah, well, my significant other runs things. That's
she
true.
Does.
You know what she's doing this weekend? She's going to hang Christmas lights on my roof because I said I don't climb ladders and I don't climb roofs.
I can see it.
And she said, I do. I'm making it happen. And I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Who did the ugly sweater thing?
We both did them. I saw that you posted. We made them. Yeah, you posted the question. No. Oh, yeah, she won't buy a store-bought. She doesn't want anyone. We went to an ugly sweater contest, and you saw the pictures, obviously.
I did.
Yeah, no, we sat down the other night and spent a couple hours having fun with a glue gun and all kinds of gaudy
stuff. They were
kind
of cute. I didn't think
yeah, they weren't ugly. Yeah, she says she wants them to be gaudy cute. Is that possible?
Well, she hit cute, and it kind of gaudy-ish. Yeah.
But I came up with this idea of buying this little, is like a stuffed animal thing. You know, it was probably about a foot long. It was three-dimensional, so it had 5 inches of girth on it and glued it to my back. It looked like a polar bear ran into my back. People love that more than anything, I think. But we won the best dressed couples award. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. What's going on with you and family, though? What's happening?
Oh, Lord. I mean, we're just getting ready for the holidays, and I got kids in every direction doing everything. We just went to the Christmas lighting on base at Randolph.
Oh, that's good.
And I froze my tush off. I am not joking. The northern girl is officially a southern girl.
You have arrived.
I had two pairs of pants on. I had a shirt, a sweater, and a winter jacket and a scarf on it. And then I was like about a half an inch from my husband at all times. Like I was freezing. And it was maybe 38 out.
Our guest probably thinks you're a wimp, right?
Well,
now,
he probably does, but we're in the same latitude. I mean,
oh, that's true.
Minnesota, New Hampshire.
You equal.
Matter of fact, we might have be a little further up there. It's bad.
You're on the same vein, just as we're in the holidays. I know people are going to be listening to this and the holidays will have passed.
Well,
they now have it stamped to know when we were recording this one. We're running a holiday 5K in the morning, me and Sherry and her.
With the ugly sweaters?
I'm not wearing an ugly sweater to run in, but I guess if it was cold enough, I would. But I think it's supposed to be 60.
But if I text Sherry, she'd
be. Oh, there. Don't get me in trouble. They're in my closet. She's not here. I have a chance to burn those suckers down. All right, let's get to this.
All right. Well, speaking of, we kind of alluded to our next guest that he is originally from way up north in Minnesota.
Got to say it with an accent.
Minnesota.
It? Minnesota.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Minnesota?
Don't you know?
I can do New England and Boston because I got packed the car, but Minnesota, I don't know how good I'm on that with Fargo.
That's that pretty right? good, actually, I Fargo, guess. Yeah, I'm an Okie. I'm not even going to attempt that, actually.
Speaking of Okie.
Oh, here we go.
Well, so you go Okie. How about OU?
What about OU?
In Michigan.
What about OU in Michigan?
Did you see the game?
That's Oklahoma. That's Ohio State.
I know.
No, it was a good game. It's a good
bathroom
game.
Is OU.
My bathroom is, but not Ohio State. Not Ohio State. You're talking about Ohio State.
Oh. But it was bad.
It was not good, yeah.
Well, it depends on what side you're on.
That's true.
Okay, I'm getting off track. Anyways, we were back in Minnesota, and that is where our next guest is originally
from. I'm excited for this interview.
Not he lived in Minnesota. He's originally from Connecticut.
Okay.
But he ends up residing in Minnesota. He was with the Guard for 32 years, and he was a maintenance specialist and flight engineer, and he was injured during an in-flight training accident. And that right there is going to be the key, because this story is pretty almost unbelievable. And I'll disclose that I knew him because he was one of our patrons in our program.
Okay.
I didn't know him specifically. He wasn't my case or anything, but I did know of his case, and it was one of those kind of listen.
You hear
follow-ups and whatnot. And so he is now that, at least when I look at him and he smiles and he's just a very
joyous
guy, good energy. And he is soon to be moving on with his new civilian life.
New chapter coming.
New chapter. So no further ado, that I want to welcome Jeff Caroon. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to this. And I do have a pretty good story to tell.
You do, because you and I chatted first. And I knew just some very little things, because I never knew the specifics of your case, but I knew there was an injury and it was not going in the right direction. And it seemed to be one hurdle over another. And to tell you how many hurdles that was, I retired 2 years ago. And he's coming in behind me now. That's a lot of
the
hurdles.
Process is
process, injuries, you know, healing, all that stuff. So to start everything off, just for a little bit of linear structure, so people kind of know where everything started, what led you into the military first? Like, how did we go from Connecticut boy to
military? I was guarding my entire life. Well, I take that back. I did a little bit in the reserves, but I joined back in 90, and it was a way to go to college. Originally we had a good college plan, and right out of high school. So I enlisted and started off. My first job was a jet engine mechanic, and the college thing didn't quite go. Maybe I just wasn't ready for it, but I ended up getting a full-time job as a technician working on base. And I ended up pursuing that instead of going to college right away. So that kind of got me wrapped up. So I've been full-time the entire time as either dual status or an AGR, a little bit in there too. So
hold on, Jeff, for a minute. Just for the audience, when people, there's civilians that listen too, but when they hear dual status, we're basically saying that is a guardsman or a reservist that does their weekend duty, but their daytime job is similar to their weekend duty. They're either identical or very similar, and they're doing that job, but they're doing it in a civilian status as a GS employee, not a military person.
So I started. I started way back then, and I ended up meeting my wife. She had moved from Minnesota to Connecticut and joined that unit. And she was supposed to get married to somebody she had met. Ironically enough, was a C5 loadmaster that she had met at his tech school. And it didn't work out, and fate brought us together. And we ended up getting married, and everything was going great until our unit was on the chopping block for BRAC.
Oh yeah.
So my job, at the time, I had moved from the engine shop to the electrical environmental shop. I was the shop chief, and they wanted to put me back to the engine shop when they were going to restructure stuff from the BRAC. And I found the opportunity to maybe, you know, try something different. And there was some opportunities in the reserves up at Westover Air Reserve Base up in Massachusetts. They're taking on flight engineers for C5s. So I opted to jump, gave up my full-time job and went up to Westover and went through all the C5 training. And I was up there for a little bit of time as a C5 engineer. So I did come down to San Antonio for the schoolhouse. I just moved from Altus, Oklahoma to the reserves down here in San Antonio. So I spent a good chunk of time down here back in 2007, 8-ish, when the schoolhouse had just moved down here. Through that, and then my wife was still in the Connecticut unit, and things were, they were still going through the whole BRAC process, and she was an AGR at the time, and they were talking about getting rid of AGRs. Also, we were some of the first ones to go. So she got an offer back from Minnesota, where she came from, and she opted to take it. And at the time, I was basically just a street reservist, and I was able to commute back and forth from Minnesota to Massachusetts to do my job as a flight engineer. They would take me out for about 2 or 3 weeks at a time to fly missions overseas and do makeup training and things like that. And that worked for a little while until it was hard for me to nail a full-time job down while I was gone for as long as I was. And just family life, it wasn't working. So the Minnesota Air Guard actually has C-130s, so they also have flight engineers.
Right.
Eventually, I was able to get a spot with them, and I transferred over to the Minnesota Air Guard. So back through, I went through retraining again, and shortly thereafter, I went full-time as I came back as a technician with the Minnesota Air Guard. And I've been there ever since. So, and until we moved down to Texas here about 3.5 years ago, that's kind of the backstory of how I ended up where I was. But kind of what started the whole me ending up in San Antonio, I guess you could say, was I was on a TDY for a conference, and I ended up falling down a set of stairs, injured my foot. And this is back in 2016, and I went to the doctor, and they misdiagnosed it. They missed something on the X-ray, and they thought it was more of a nerve issue because I just had a plantar fascia surgery about 6 months prior to that on the same foot. And I kept telling them there was something wrong. There's something wrong here. And eventually, after really pushing it, and it took me about 4 or 5 months of trying to convince the pain management doctor that there was still something underlying that was going on there. And they had given me all kinds of nerve blocks and things like that. So they try to, you know, make go away what they thought the problem was. And finally I talked them into saying enough's enough. I need to see somebody else. And when they finally did, they realized that my foot was just destroyed. I've been walking around on it, and you know, they blocked so much of the right. pain, you know, it was a mess, and it's like it needed surgery. And so
Jeff, on that right there, just so people understand that when you get the nerve blocks, right, that it's exactly what this says, you're blocking the nerve, so there's no pain signal coming through, right? And so you're just going along doing your thing, having no idea that you had a fracture in your foot, right? I think that's what was going on.
It was a just a, you know, a pretty straightforward Liz Frank fracture that would have been an easy fix had been caught at the beginning. So since it wasn't, the doctor realized that I really didn't care much for his overall attitude and his prognosis and what he wanted to do to fix it. And which would pretty much put me in some kind of weird brace. And I'm like, this isn't going to work for my career. And unfortunately, I was going through TRICARE at the time, and I don't need to slam TRICARE, but I had an underlying feeling that, you know, you don't quite get the greatest care sometimes because they don't get paid as doctors as much as ethically you'd like to think not. But I ended up taking my own insurance through as my technician job. So I was using my wife's insurance on TRICARE, but I ended up getting Blue Cross, and I found one of the top surgeons in the Minneapolis metro area specialized in feet. And I went and had a meeting with him as soon as my Blue Cross was active after January 1st. And he took one look at it. I showed him the x-rays from the original injury and kind of laid it all out to him. And he's like, yeah, this was somebody really overlooked this. He goes, but I think we can fix it.
Hey, Jeff. Jeff, quick question, just to, you know, tie a few loose ends up. So when you injured yourself, you were TDY. That's what I heard.
Correct.
Was the initial misdiagnosis a military doc, or was it a civilian doc?
These were all civilian docs, just due to the fact that there's no military treatment facility in our area.
I got you.
And, you know, being a guard base like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was all out on the normal, out on the inside.
And then just to circle back to the initial fall, was that just purely an accident, Jeff, which we all have from time to time? Or was there something in play that, you know, manifested that caused you to fall?
Nope. That was purely just an accident going down some stairs, not paying attention. It was dark. It was dark. So
yeah, no, I hear you.
They weren't lit the greatest, but
so So your doctor, you know, the top specialist is like, hey, we can fix this.
Yeah.
Right. Gives you a little bit of hope. And
he did, you know, really, it did give me a lot of hope. And he, you know, we kind of laid the plan out and I'm like, yeah, let's go. I'm game. So he went in and did some major reconstructive surgery. It looked like I had a big chunk of a hardware store on my foot when they were done. They had to cut it and put it back together and move stuff around. There was at least 40 pieces of hardware.
Oh my gosh, in a foot.
Yeah. So I mean, it was not weight bearing for quite a while, like in almost 9 months. You know, things were looking good. Got back once I started walking around a little bit, the hardware, and this was kind of where things just kept going downhill. You know, you had that like, hey, this is fixed. This is looking, get back to normal life again. I've been waiting around for 6 to 9 months. Start walking around a couple months later, you know, things start to fail. The hardware starts to fail because it's just not holding, having issues. So leads back to another surgery. This went on for about 4 different surgeries spaced out over 2 years.
Unbelievable.
Were you, to sustain yourself financially, you were kept on orders, right? Were you in the MedCon program then?
No, I was GS employee at that point. So, I was still doing, I just was not flying at the time. I was just doing my normal, GS I was a mission planner as a GS. So yeah, I was just off of flying status, but through the process, there was a point I was up back on flying status for a brief period of time in between surgeries. And then the hardware started to fail again. But so about the 4th surgery of putting my foot back together, I think they finally got everything straightened out. And there were some new techniques that had come out. So he was trying everything he could. And the unfortunate part is the more that they cut, the more that they drilled holes, the more that they put screws in, it just kept weakening things up.
Right.
And it was like one of these, the Hail Mary was the last surgery. And actually, I backed it up. That was pretty much everything that they had that they could throw at it. And things were working out. And things back to kind of normal. I was up, moving around, able to do PT tests. So we think we finally got this thing straightened out now. And life's sort of kind of getting back up to where it was, back up on flying status, and things are good. You know, I think I'm finally got to put this behind me, and it was a long couple of years. And
yeah.
So shortly thereafter, it was the spring of 2018. Just 1 year.
We're at 2 years now.
Yeah, we're 16 to 18. And so spring of 2018, we were doing a local training mission. And I gotten up to go to the back. I was an extra person that was going through an evaluator upgrade. So I was observing a check ride going on.
You were on the 130 or the C5?
This is the 130 at this point.
130, okay.
Yep. And so I'd gone to the back. I was climbing back up the flight deck stairs. And we just come off the drop zone not too long before. We were climbing out from we were doing a heavy equipment drop, training drop. And it was a pretty windy day. It was a lot of turbulence. And going up the steps of the flight deck, we hit some turbulence and ended up getting kind of bumped off the steps and landed really weird on the floor by the crew entrance door. And when I did, I landed on, I tend to favor my left foot versus my right because of all the injuries that I had on my right foot, but I ended up injuring both feet in that fall. So all the hardware that has gotten finally straightened out in the right foot got completely destroyed.
Oh my gosh.
Back to square one again there. And I ended up breaking 2 bones in my right foot, my left foot that never had an accident. I never had any issues before. So right back to the same doc again, and he's just shaking his head. He goes, I don't know what else we can really do your right foot here, but we'll address the left foot. So they put a couple plates and a couple screws in there and got through that, got that healed while kind of staying as much off of my right foot as I could and readdressed my right foot. He basically said, I'm going to try one more thing and we're going to try this again. And they went ahead and operated one more time on my right foot, and it didn't work. So after that was all said and done, he goes, we're pretty much down to, you know, there's not much left we can do. And they're not telling you that, or they'll never sit there and tell you that you should have it amputated. They're waiting for you to come up with that on your own and kind of coaxing you in the direction of, you know, it needs to be your decision.
Yeah, they don't want to bomb you.
No,
let me ask this. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask is, because I, before you hit the next part of it, because I, you know, where it's coming, what's going on in your mind? This is 2 years. I mean, you're two years, you came up, you're back on flight status, life's turning again. And then seriously, air turbulence. And for any civilian folks that have not flown on military planes, there's no cushion there on a 130. So when he hit the air pocket and came down, he landed all over metal. I mean, that's a hard landing. And so, bam, you do that. Now you find out, I got two broken feet. Like, what's going on with you mentally during this whole time?
That was the biggest thing right there. And it just kind of went down. I went down a deep hole after that. And it really, I mean, it just, you know, I thought I had put all that behind me. And it's just like, what did I do? I mean, what did I do wrong to, you know, in life to, who'd I upset?
Yeah. And,
but so, yeah, I kind of, it really did put me down a really deep hole. And I, you know, went through, got they put my left foot back together. They put my right foot back together as much as they could. And they said, there's not much more we can do. Like you said, six to nine months of non-weight bearing in between surgeries. Mm. And, you know, it starts to really become like, and he's like, there's not much more we can do after this if it doesn't work, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, if you did have an amputation, it's usually about 6 weeks you're up walking around. And at this point, I'm adding all the time up of, you know, time I was on crutches or on an e-scooter, and I could have been having my life back already. And, you know, and it's starting to kind of go through my head. And then as the healing process went with that final surgery and it didn't work, and they really started saying there's no more options. And I even went to another doctor and got another opinion through the University of Minnesota. And they kind of came up with the same thing. They're like, this is done. I mean, and he was pretty blunt about it. He goes, there's not much more that's going to happen here. So
yeah, no one thinks about that, right, Jeff? You don't think that something as, I don't want to say a routine break, right? Because that's not what we're expecting to go, but to go from that and what you endured for 2 years, and then now here you are being told basically there's nothing else we can do for your right foot.
And at that point, I kind of come to the conclusion of this isn't the quality of life I want. I mean, I had two different sized feet after the surgery. I had to buy two pairs of shoes each time I had to go buy shoes. I'm like, it was just, I had enough. And, you know, so I'm kind of coming to grips with it. And I talked to my MedCon case manager, Lieutenant Colonel O'Connor, and she's like, you're not getting your foot amputated unless you come down here. She goes, I'm going to try getting you into the CFI.
And you had the best of the best, because that she was the probably the biggest advocates in that place. And she can make miracles happen.
I'll tell you what, it was a miracle too. I mean, because I had gotten myself into such a black hole at that point with just depression and drinking too much. And it was just a bad scene. It wasn't going anywhere. And, you know, that was about a year later. So that was like the spring of 2019 when this really started to come to the point that, hey, this foot is not going to make it. And she got me down here for a consult in June of 2019. And I came down and there was a doc down here and he took one look at it. And he's just like, I'd like a chance to try to fix this. And I'm like, well, I've heard this before. And he threw out a plan like I'd never heard before. And they have some really, really awesome stuff at Brooks Army Medical Center. I can't say enough about them or the CFI as far as just some of the technology and the procedures that they have and they use. I'd never had to deal with military medical up until that point. It's always been civilian. And I was kind of a little leery and, you know, just going in there, it made me feel good. And I was like, you know what? What do I got to lose at this point? Go ahead. If you want to try to fix it, try to fix it. So I ended up coming back down in August of 2019. I haven't left San Antonio since. But so I came down for surgery. We basically packed everything up. And my wife and I, she just retired and drove down here. And I got the surgery on my foot that August of 2019. And things were looking really good, actually. They'd kind of taken bone off my hip, kind of put it into my foot. They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Bone stimulator that actually my insurance would not cover before. through Blue Cross or through TRICARE. They managed to get that, which kind of helped. And, you know, things were looking up. I'm like, hey, man, we finally got it this time with this, you know, new technology and things. So shortly thereafter, I'd say about October, November of that same year, while I was still laid up from the surgery I just had, started having issues with my left foot. And the hardware that they had put in my left foot from the original fall in the airplane, one of the screws started backing itself out and started coming out the bottom of my foot. Well, hadn't come out the bottom of my foot. It had gotten to the point where it wallowed out something inside my foot and left the space for a staph infection to really take hold in there. So when I went in to had him look at that foot when I was in there for a follow-up, and he took one look at it, did a little test, and they're like, he came back to me like and said, that foot needs to come off. And I'm like, what? I'm like, you gotta be kidding. There's nothing wrong with it other than it's got like this bump on the bottom that looks like a big callus kind of thing. And he goes, no, the hardware is all, after we took an x-ray, you know, the hardware's coming out and it's caused, you got a bad infection going on in there. There's not much we can do about it. It's too, because it's actually life-threatening at this point. And I'm like, okay. So maybe I had a couple of days to really think that one through and let it, then you have a chance to sink in. And I was in and woke up without a left foot. So
your wife was down here at the time when you moved down here, when she came down with you and everything. Yep. So your support system this whole time has been, like, through all of this, has really been your wife.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has. And she, you know, and she, like I said, she just retired and she didn't have the greatest end to her career. It was kind of, it was a bittersweet. And there was some other issues that she had with some toxic leadership that she wasn't exactly in her right place either, but, you know, she had to try to hold it all together to keep me going in the right direction and be there to support me. But
wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it was by January of 2020. So it was just after the flip of the new year, I ended up losing my left foot and I came down here for my right. So that was, I'm like, all right, how's this one going to work now? So COVID hit. So I got stuck in the middle of that. So right about, let me back that up a little bit. So I got through the surgery. I don't really care much for hospitals and it's just not my thing. And I ended up talking the doc into discharging me like a day or so later. And I ended up falling shortly after getting out of the hospital, just trying to figure this whole new leg thing out and minus a leg. Everybody does. It's just a matter of when. And so that ended up putting me back in the hospital once for, I injured my right foot again when I fell. And then again, I fell on the residual limb on my left and blew that and opened that back up.
But it's not exactly shocking considering, you know, if we're going on a timeline, you're at like 3 years of pretty much no mobility.
So
not only are you having no feet or losing a foot and all that, you have atrophy probably going on in your legs. And, you know, you're not strong. So, I mean, it's not shocking.
No, I hadn't even gotten to physical therapy at that point because of the non-weight bearing issue on the right side. So I just kind of just started putting weight back on the right side when I ended up losing my left foot. So between a couple of falls, I ended up in the hospital for that left side. I had to have a revision on it shortly thereafter having it amputated. And then COVID really sank in that March. So I couldn't get into the CFI. They were shut down. What I normally would have been like 4 to 6 weeks before you had a leg or at least going in for physical therapy, there wasn't anything. So it wasn't until August, 6 months later, that I actually started getting physical therapy and actually got a leg. So it was a long time that I way longer than, you know, most the normal process, I'll put it that way. So,
well, and then just imagine how many of us, you know, we're struggling just with COVID, right? Now you're like, your world shut down, and people that are like more social or energized by being out and about and people and stuff, boom, you're home. There's none of that.
Well, right? New area even, right? Yes, yeah. Even moving, so they're moving down here. Yeah.
New area.
even any of the friendship support or relationships you have are covered.
Yeah, that's gone. Friendship support's gone. Your wife who just retired, who's, I don't care who you are, I don't care how much of a rock star you are, there's a struggle when you retire. It's just part of the process, whether it's mild, moderate, or a lot. That's a huge transition by itself. Your move was a huge transition by itself. Your leg getting amputated unexpectedly, or your foot unexpectedly, was a huge transition. And then, sure, let's just throw COVID on top of all that. And then you can't do anything for, like, no physical therapy, no nothing for 6 months. And yet you're here talking with us.
And smiling. I mean, I'm looking at you on the screen. I know that our guests are only getting to hear this audio, but we see Jeff. Oh. We're talking with him.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was at the time, like, you know, it's still better than it was in Minnesota as far as the whole COVID lockdowns.
Well, here, you weren't doing it with snow, at least.
I mean, just that they were rough up there. I mean, compared to things were mild here as far as the way things were shut down. So, it is what it is. And we made it through it. But when I finally was able to get, I was one of the first people that they let back in. And it was like, they only let X amount of people at a time work out or get PT. So I was able to start getting up, moving around, and get on a leg. And before that, I was on a knee scooter for the most part. I used a wheelchair a little bit because I used my right foot to push myself around with. But with all that extra pressure from January until August on my right foot, because it's taking all my weight versus half of it, probably wasn't helping it much. So once I was able to get up and walk around on a prosthetic, distribute the weight a little bit better, kind of moving on, the right foot was still giving me some issues. And one of the cool things at the CFI is something called the IDEO that they had developed it here.
Yeah.
So they fit me with an IDEO, which basically, it kind of acts like a prosthetic that bears your weight up by your knee and then kind of takes the weight off your foot. So
right, it redistributes your weight so you're able to put the pressure on. Right.
So I got fit for one of those on my right side and a prosthetic on my left side. And we were kind of hoping that that was going to be enough to take that pressure off the right and kind of let it heal and do its thing. And we went for a few months going through PT. Things were going fairly good. And the right side was still giving me some trouble. And again, the surgery that they tried to do when I first came down here, end result, it couldn't take it. That foot had been operated on too many times. And it got to the point where it was either going to need another surgery again or opt for the amputation. And at that point, I already had one amputation. I was like, how much worse could it be? I mean, I lost one. That was probably the bigger one. I mean, sure. I just want my life back. I want some quality of life. This isn't. So November, right before Thanksgiving of 2020, I had my second amputation. So it was I'm coming up on 2 years for my left and just over a year for my right. Is that right? Yeah, I guess it would be. So
talk to us real quick, Jeff, about, you talked earlier, you alluded to, look, went into depression, just these things you're dealing with. What got you through? If you look back now, what would you say it was that just got you to where you are today?
You know, it's just my support system that, and again, as things started to open up at the CFI, like I said, just being able to come down here was probably the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And I look back at that now and, I did talk to a prosthetist at a normal civilian clinic, and I've seen people here that have started there and see what you get on that side of it versus this side of it. And just the mental health, I mean, all the, just the support, the amount of other people that are in the same boat, and we kind of help each other. You see somebody having a problem or what worked for you, and at least you can talk and communicate with people that are, going through the same thing you are. And it's really helped. I mean, they helped me, they've lifted me up, and I turn around and do the same for, a lot of these new guys that are coming through too. And, the the clientele, I guess, there is, when the war stopped, a lot of the lower extremity injuries from IEDs and everything kind of stopped too. But there's still a good chunk of people that end up losing limbs, unfortunately, from motorcycles. It seems to be the bigger culprit right now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, still, these younger kids, and they think their life's over. They lost a leg, and you kind of sit there and share stories with each other, and kind of like, this is just the beginning. It's not that bad. But I do attribute everything to where I am now, with keeping my attitude positive. It's just the physical therapist, the mental health providers, the occupational therapist, everybody there has really been, pivotal in keeping my attitude in the right place. And on the other side of that, you got to you have to try yourself too. I'm a positive person, always looking to the positive, and I looked at it as getting my life back after going through 4 years of not really living life and, just the quality of life. What I can do now is more than I could have done for the last, those 4 years going through that. So, and it's getting better every day. There's more stuff than just the opportunities that I've gotten to do some of the trips for rock climbing, kayaking, whitewater rafting.
Did you say rock climbing?
I did, yes.
Wow, come on, man.
Yeah, Colorado, around Crested Butte. Oh. Rock climbing, yeah. It's challenging, but it just shows you what you can, where the limits, or what is and isn't a limit, and what you thought was, and how to push through it. And just having these groups, Vail Veterans Group has been a great one, too. We went out there, the Adaptive Sports Center, and Crested Butte, and all these things were through the CFI. They bring you out and get you out and show you how to do things out in the community and what you can do to give back. But it helps everything.
All of it. Yeah. The CFI. So for people that are not familiar with it, it's called the Center for Intrepid. It was actually funded by Mr. Fisher.
Washington? Oh.
No.
I've heard his name. I've heard his name that he makes big donations.
Oh, he probably does. Yeah, but the funding was actually from Mr. Fisher, the Fisher House, mm-hmm. right? So it's the military equivalent of the Ronald McDonald House, is the Fisher House. And he funded it because he didn't want to deal with all the red tape going through Corps of Engineers and all that stuff. So he funded it himself and helped design and the whole nine yards. The beauty, I've been there many, 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 many times. I swear I could give a tour of that place. That place is definitely special. And you had made a comment, you saw a lot of people with motorcycle injuries and stuff like that. If you'd scroll back 4 or 5 more years from that, it would have been all the injuries from OEF, OIF, all the different operations and Anaconda and all that stuff. And you would have seen a combat, trauma, mm-hmm. Related injuries. One of the things that sets the CFI apart from a lot of the other places, you mentioned this, Jeff, was with the prosthetics. They have a prosthetician on site that is like, if Jeff was like, this feels like funny, they stop what you're doing because they don't mess with that. And they send them to the prosthetician and they get that looked at and they'll adjust right there. Right. I mean, you guys get.
Well, there's actually four now on staff that with a team of technicians for each of them. So it's a matter of texting, or they're usually up on the floor when you're working out anyway, and you see them walking by and, or one of the PTs will notice they have enough experience. Like, that doesn't look like your leg's adjusted right.
Yeah. And
they'll fix it right there on the spot.
It is seriously right there. They're on them every second, and their equipment is geared towards the injured. So did you get to go in the Gravitron ever? The treadmill that lifts you up with air.
It's a treadmill. Yeah. It's a zero-G treadmill.
And so I've been in it before. I got injured one time and I was using it, and they put you in and they, I don't know how to describe it, but there's like
like bike shorts, like these really tight bike shorts.
Yeah, bike shorts. And then the whole thing's like sealed over the treadmill.
Like a kayak, it has a skirt around.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And then they fill it with air, essentially. It's sealed enough. And then the amount of air pressure offsets your weight.
Right.
And that's how they get people back to running or walking, running, right. jogging. And so you get to do it. For mine, they were looking at my gait. And so they took half my weight off and then they were watching my gait. And then yeah, as people are injured and they heal, right, they put more weight until they can do the full thing. No, it's pretty awesome. Yeah, so that place is a magical place. I mean, it really is amazing what they do there.
It is, you know, they offered the research and development department downstairs where they came, or the idea, I believe, came from there. But they're working on a lot of other projects, and they're always looking for people to help out with some of the new things that they're testing out, research projects. And, you know, I was always the first one. Yeah, sure, I'll help you out wherever I can if it makes things better for other people. And you know, I get to try out some new stuff and just some cutting edge things. So I'm actually in a test program right now for an adjustable socket, a prosthetic socket. So it self adjusts versus as you gain or lose volume during the day. So you don't need to take it off or put spacer socks on and off. So about 2 visits into that right now. It's, I think, in collaboration with the University of Washington State.
Yeah.
Going through that process, it was just pretty cool.
Yeah, they are and cutting edge, and they're trying to get people. This isn't like if you're at the CFI, you're like on your way out the door, and you're going to get medically retired. They have people that they have the 360, which is a 360 degree simulator, These guys that are trying to go back to their job, and it might involve combat and whatnot.
Right.
They can put them in and adjust it. The plates on that simulator are so sensitive that if you took a very thin twig or like a toothpick and it fell over, it would measure that. It's that sensitive. They've made movies in that thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They have weapons. You'd love it in there. They have a simulator in there where you get to go shoot. Mm-hmm. And then they let to see if they can, if they've had shoulder arm injuries or whatever, that they can go in and handle their weapon properly and do well with that. Or the guys have TBIs and stuff like that. It's amazing what they do.
That's the final step of the whole test. On that socket, they're going to actually put me through there. You still have to perform tasks like a body drag or a person drag and put you through the simulator, clear a stairway.
Yeah.
That type of a thing, but just to see how it reacts. But they do put people through that to see if the goal is to put people back in service. Unfortunately, with my career field and just the amount of years I have in service, it's, I have too many things going against me. Might have been a difference, but losing both,
going against you is one thing, but going forward is another, right? So you're now waiting for,
it's a new
kind of coming out on the other side, right? You're waiting for your final set of orders, right?
Yep. I am.
And so now what's the future for Jeff Carew and what does this look like?
Exactly. So, I'm still trying to figure it out once I get some dates, figure out how the rest of it's going to shake out. But, I think warmer weather is definitely in my future. Not
you staying put?
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere warm, be it San Antonio or somewhere near San Antonio or around the area. I have some of the greatest care available to me right here, which is a plus. Plus, the weather's nicer than it is in winters in Minnesota. I mean, it's nice to visit, but, to do a little ice fishing or something here and there, but I'm definitely getting used to the warmer weather. I can agree with you there as far as.
Hey, Jeff, earlier you talked about, how important it is to keep a positive attitude, and I'm a motivational speaker. It's what I love to do, but I can't really give anyone motivation. In a moment I might give them something that inspires them in the moment, but it really comes from within. So we can't just tell somebody, oh man, just have a bright outlook, right? So I heard you say, really, for a lot of your life, you've had a very positive outlook. Can you just share maybe with listeners as we get kind of towards the end of this, time with you on this episode, how important, what did you do? Was there anything to kind of shift your energy to keep it positive? How important is hope? How important is it to have goals? Things that you're going to strive to. When I hear you talk about rock climbing, kayaking, and other things, right? That inspires me, man. But it's just not as easy as telling somebody to buck up. So
no, it's not. I mean, you got plenty of bad days. I mean, me, I've always had a positive outlook, a positive attitude, and it's just I'm always a glass, you know, half full, not half empty person. I've always been that way. And like I said, there's been some tough times. There was some tough times dealing with this in the beginning. And, you know, having faith, having, you know, God above, and I found that certain things, and, you know, I just opted to, it had to do with a lot of medication I was on, but, you know, I kind of stepped back and found myself, you know, drinking more than I should. And I noticed that wasn't helping. And, you know, once I kind of started changing, getting away from certain things that would kind of really depress you, and, you know, having some faith in a higher power, and, you know, just keeping a positive outlook, it helped, and it kind of helped me keep direction and focus on where I wanted to head, you know, where I was going. But like you said, my goal is, you know, instead of setting something too far down the road, I was just starting to set smaller goals, like this, I can do this and I can do this. And, you know, as you keep meeting them, and just one of my last goals actually was to run the Army 10 miler back in November or October, I'm sorry. And I did it. So we went out to DC and we ran an Army 10 miler. And
amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of cool.
I mean, it's fun, Jeff, listening to you and watching the expressions on your face, even as you talk about it, man.
I love challenges. And, you know, and like you said, it's hard to, like you said, you're a motivational speaker. And it's funny that you just said that and kind of realized something, because I had a lot of people come up to me and they're like, you know what, you're an inspiration. And I guess I really didn't take or think much about it. And like, how am I inspiring anybody kind of thing? But even just going out, even through that Army 10 miler, or I did the 5K down in the south part of San Antonio, Turkey Trot, you know, when people are just like, wow, you got out there, and, you know, I'm not going to complain about running anymore. You're running with, you know, no legs. So it's like, you know, hey, you're an inspiration for me. I'm like, oh, thanks. I guess you don't even realize it when you do it sometimes, but, and just keeping a positive attitude.
Yeah.
But to step back and hear people say something, it kind of, you know what, maybe it makes you feel good, because you're actually helping somebody else without really realizing you're doing it, I guess.
Yeah, so. You're not done yet, Jeff. That's what I've got for you. And,
no.
You know, because of your outlook, and you're still in this thing, and people are watching, and people are seeing you persevere and overcome, and you've got it sounds to me like an incredible bride, a wife by your side, and you've got two grown kiddos you told me about. And man, you've got a message that's helping others who are facing tough times right now see that there is more out in front of them. And I love that about what you've shared with us, Jeff.
It's about your being, you know, when you were saying it's a, you know, when I step back and people say that, it's because you're not doing anything but being you, right?
Exactly.
And that is what's inspiring to people, is because you keep, I mean, it's going to sound silly, but you put one foot in front of the other, or one prosthetic in front of the other.
Yeah, that's it. And I've seen a lot of people, good friends that I go to therapy with, or did go to therapy with and worked out with, that they tend to slip. They can slip down that slope real easy. Just have a couple of bad days, being stuck in a wheelchair because they can't get their leg on or something.
And
you know, and it's tough. And, you know, it's all about that attitude. And, you know, like I said, I don't know if I'd be in the same place I am right now had I not come down here. I'll put it that way. I really
understand.
Don't. You can put a shout out to the good Lieutenant Colonel O'Connor over there.
Definitely. Oh, definitely.
She's a little angel on earth. I've seen her perform some serious miracles there.
she did. I'm so grateful I ended up down here. So.
I appreciated your transparency too, Jeff, right? Because when we're facing tough times, sometimes we seek other things to help us escape from what we're facing. I really appreciate your transparency and all of that as well.
Yeah.
So, all right. I think we need to land the plane, as you like to say.
Yeah, I do. Land the plane.
Land the plane.
We're talking with somebody who's part of flight crew, you know, Jeff. Jeff brought a great, great story of resilience today, how things can just happen so quickly, right? And lead to something you never imagined. And yet we are stronger than we believe ourselves to be. And yeah. and we can't overcome, right? And we don't do it alone.
No.
People try, right? I've certainly been in situations where I've tried, and nothing to the extreme that Jeff has shared with us today. But man, it's we have people around us who, and we have that opportunity to be that for others. And I, again, in Jeff's story, I heard him share that he's doing that for others. I love every bit of that.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, this is why we do the podcast, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we try to bring resources to people in every single facet that we can think of, right? Because, you know, I sometimes get imposter syndrome and think maybe, oh my God, that's already been done. But you know what? Sometimes you do it and you do it and he does it and she does it. And four different people hear it in four different ways, right? Yeah. And so something will resonate with someone through this, right? So maybe this topic's been hit before, but maybe this will resonate with someone.
Yeah, this is the one. This is the seven, the rule of seven, right?
Rule I hear things
seven times. This may have been the seventh time somebody listening has heard this and they're finally like, okay, I'm back. I'm in it. I've got this, right?
We gotcha. That's right. And so cool thing is that, you know, Jeff is in San Antonio.
Yeah, we're going to get
so
the meeting.
And so I keep snagging these guys. We're going to have our own, like, Beyond the Frontline club going soon here. And so Jeff will be coming up
to
our veteran breakfast, and we're definitely going to chat more.
I won't be there in December. That's what we're doing it in about a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, roughly. I'm gonna be out of state. That just cropped up. But Jeff, at some point in the future, my friend, I look forward to being in the room with you and shaking your hand, hugging your neck, sharing a meal, a coffee, whatever that may be, brother. I look forward to being there with you.
I appreciate it. I look forward to myself. So
all right, both
for having me on. This has been good to share the story, and I hope it helped others. So.
It will.
It's about connecting, and the more we connect with people that we resonate with, the better it is. You know, you just, everybody raises that vibration. I mean, I hear all the talk of vibration and all this other stuff that's trending talk, but the reality of it is like when we're all connecting and we do resonate with each other, we just make it better for each other, you know, even when somebody's having a tough time, right?
And Jeff, you never know. I get myself in enough trouble on these podcasts.
Oh, here we go.
That she may need to replace me someday. You might have an opportunity here. See, she's already got it in her mind, Jeff.
I can tell you, Jeff, when this first started, he's already corrupted. Because when this first started a year ago, he was Mr. Straight-Laced. You listened to the early podcast, and he was always very straight-laced. And I was like the sassy one. And now... Scroll ahead. Right. And we get this.
You can validate for the audience, Jeff. You can tell I'm still a Boy Scout. I'm not.
With horns.
She said with horns. Jeff, I really appreciate you.
I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks for taking the time to be with
us. I appreciate it. Thanks for having
me. Any last thoughts or anything you want to share with the audience as a last tidbit?
No, I just, other than don't ever give up. Don't ever give up. It's, you know, at the end of the darkness, there is light, and you just got to keep heading. Just keep your head down and move forward, and don't give up. And the things do get better. And it's all what you make from. It's all attitude. 100% attitude.
I love it.
So I'll end with this. I don't have a quote, but I have a visual for you guys. Is that, and you alluded to this already on Don't Giving Up. There's a cartoon I saw where somebody is digging underground, they're looking for diamonds, and they're digging and digging and digging. And it shows the person stopping, like they just gave up, and they're about an inch from an entire wall of diamonds.
Whatever that may be on the other side.
Exactly. So you don't know where your diamonds are, right? We really don't know where they are. And sometimes you're going to run into a flood of them. Sometimes there'll be nothing for a long time. And sometimes you'll find one here and there. So I put that out to the audience as, you know, just keep going. Your diamonds are going to fall where they need to and when they need to. And when you're having a hard time, find those that you resonate with, and they're going to help support you.
That's
all I have, Jay. You have anything else?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not really a quote, but it ties into what you're saying. I once heard somebody say the only difference between those that do and those that don't are those that do it. Right? I mean, that's the difference. It's about putting in the effort.
Can you say that 10 times?
Yeah, the only difference between those that do and those that don't are those that do it. That's it. I'm not going to say it 10 times, but I was able to say it twice, though. How about that action?
That's excellent. All right. So I think that's everything. I think we're about ready to wrap this up.
Good.
So here we are. For us, it's a little bit pre-holidays. By the time it comes out, it will be post-holidays. So we do hope that everybody had a wonderful holiday season. And from all of us here and Beyond the Frontline and Coming Home Well, our parent podcast, we wish all of you a wonderful holiday season. We hope for the best and never, ever give up.
Fantastic. Bye for now, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Frontline, a podcast of Coming Home Well. Join us every other Wednesday. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Follow us on Instagram at @ComingHomeWell_BTS or on Twitter at @ComingHomeWell. Thanks again. And until all are home and all are well.